Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Actually podcast. I'm Tristan.
I'm Bob.
And it is October 2nd of 2019, and these are the new comic listings.
Yes, and it is an expensive week for comic fans.
It is definitely an expensive week.
It was one for me.
Yeah, there's some fun stuff.
Or it will be when they go on sale.
Yes. So let's just go through all of it because there's so much.
I'm
going to start with what's sitting on top.
Right on.
This is an interesting one. This is Absolute Carnage Immortal Hulk one shot. It is by Ewing. The art is by Felipe Andrade.
Andrade.
Sure. There is no accent aigu or anything.
There's an accent aigu. No.
So he is. Interesting. Very. It's a very indie art style.
On a week that had less things that I wanted to purchase, I would have brought this home. This actually felt like a pretty sort of like vital chapter in the Immortal Hulk saga. I really wanted to get it, and I liked the art a lot, even though it's a little different than what it's got that indie kind of feel, I guess, like you said. But I really dug it, and the story itself was really good. I do have my hard no tie-ins for Absolute Carnage, so that was part of the deciding factor. This was a tough one, though. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It is very interesting in terms of like it's not like essential in either. It's not essential for the Absolute Carnage, but it's also not essential for the Immortal Hulk, and yet it's done in a really intelligent way that does fit into, like, regardless of whether it's essential, it does fit into both storylines. A little more Hulk, a little less Carnage, but at the same point there's like a thing at the end that kind of makes it a Carnage thing.
Yeah, and also it's a cool little thing that there's a nice little Spider-Man banner thing that goes on that I liked a lot.
I'm turning away from my microphone.
Oh my god, so far away from the mic.
Sorry, because I'm going to pull out Immortal Hulk number 24, which also came.
Perfect.
That is by Al Ewing and Joe Bennett, and it is the 24th issue, the wrap-up of the last really crazy storyline with the general guy, Fortean, that becomes a weird abomination hybrid
and
pukes gamma acid on everybody's face.
So good.
It's super cartoon gory, but also kind of very much... well, it does a really cool thing, actually. Oh, I see. I've left a giant fingerprint on my copy. Nice. Good thing it's mine. It does this weird thing that ties it into the literal origins of the Marvel Universe.
Yes.
Which was interesting.
Yeah that was cool.
I'm not going to say anymore. It was very cool.
It's another example of how you just don't think that that series could get any crazier, and then it just manages to get crazier.
Yeah. They're really like pulling in a different, like they went to hell and now they're pulling in a very different direction. And I should also shout out the rest of the creative team as soon as I find it. It is, oh my
Oops.
God, who is it? Jesus. Oh, and there's some sweet, it doesn't even have a credits. What the fuck? it has to have one somewhere.
Take that, people who made this comic.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Oh, wait, here it is. Joe Bennett, Roy Jose, there's like 12 inkers. God damn it. Paul Mounce is the colorist. Corey Pettit is the letterer. Sorry, all the inkers, but there's too many of you. And there's a very cool cameo at the very end that is super, super cool and funny.
Super cool and groovy.
Groovy. Way out.
Way out, man.
It's gear and fab.
So I'm picking this up. 100-page Flash Giant. Mm. This is these Walmart books
I like
that are now available here in normal comic stores for the first time. Thank God.
Half original, half reprint.
Yep.
$5 for 80 pages.
Yeah. Pretty good for 100 pages.
Oh, it's 100 pages. Oh, yeah. 100 pages. Sorry.
Yeah, and it's great. It honestly, like you said earlier, Why isn't this the Flash book?
Yeah, it
why
isn't makes this, no sense.
Why am I not getting Gail Simone writing the Flash?
Yeah, with Clayton Henry doing the art, it's great. It's like he fights King Shark. It's great. That's what I hate to be like, make comics like the, they were in the 80s or whatever, but like,
but still, this is really fun.
Make them fun and make them like, it's like, I want to read about the Flash speeding around and beating villains. I don't want to read about like the different forces of the, it's just like,
because
you can think it doesn't mean it's a good idea to put in a story and the editorship should know that.
And you know what, because we're talking about fun stuff, I want to just segue directly into, speaking of that, my pick of the week, actually. So I'm just going to
go
with
Turtles?
It. No. Well, I still love that book. But Spider-Verse.
Yeah, Spider-Verse is great.
Holy fuck, man. Yeah,
here it is.
They get me. This book gets me. I love all the choices. It's fun. It's stupid in a fun way.
Yeah.
I just like...
So it's written
I absolutely adore it.
It's a 6-issue series. This is number one. It's written by Jed McKay, who I'm not super familiar with, and the artists. So every time, Miles Morales is the key focal point of it, which if you've seen the Spider-Verse film, animated film, like that makes perfect sense.
In this case, they make up kind of a little story at the end where they kind of explain why it's him and why he's now the focal point of the new web. Peter was when Madame Web was the center of the universe and all that. Peter was the one that everyone was going to, and now there's a new web, and it's Miles Morales who is the focal point.
And it has really great art by Arthur Adams, James Harron, who's a huge favorite of mine, Stacey Lee, who is awesome, and Juan Frigeri. So each chapter it's not really like chapter, it's one story, but like he keeps getting like yanked through to different worlds in the verse, and each one is drawn by a different artist. And most importantly for me, Spider-Punk is in it.
Yeah. There's a great Spider-Punk team up.
Yeah.
And more importantly to me, there are two brand new spider characters in this, both of whom are fucking awesome.
Spider Zero is cool.
Spider Zero is absolutely amazing. And Lord Spider is probably is really a contender for number two for me, with Spider Punk at the top and and Lord Spider coming in a real close second.
I love the X-Men in the Lord Spider
world. Good.
That one is all drawn by James Harron, and
Jesus,
he's just so great. His
it's
version
so good.
Of the post-apocalyptic X-Men is fantastic.
Oh my God!
Go ahead.
The crater of Queens, where there's just like there's been a nuclear war, and all that's left of Queens is a giant crater, and there's a Mad Max Spider-Man driving around in it.
Lord Spider,
do you need to hear more?
No, yeah.
Why aren't you buying this right now?
Well, because the store's closed.
Oh crap! Right,
but they'll buy it tomorrow or when they're in the next store next.
Exactly,
because they're definitely gonna want it. Grendel, there's a new Grendel out. It is drawn by Matt Wagner and colored by Brennan Wagner. I don't know who lettered it, but it is...
It's phenomenal.
It's really good. Letters by Dave Lanfear. And it is...
Straight up channeling Moebius in the art style.
For sure. It's Grendel Prime, and if you don't know, Grendel is like... There's like a bloodline that goes from the past to the far future. This is definitely a sci-fi far future. But there's this kind of cyborg guy that's called Grendel Prime. And this is like him basically being like, I can't be around Earth anymore because it sucks. And he goes into space. And then this
also,
is like,
I think it's on the tail end of a story where he built an entire empire and it all fucked up. Right?
There's a lot of Grendel that honestly I didn't, I only know the kind of like generic beats, and
I
read the recap page.
I did not read the recap page, and
recap paragraph.
We do have all of the omnibuses at the store now too.
Oh,
so
nice.
If you want to get caught up on Grendel, which I would say is probably a pretty awesome thing to do if that kind of 90s book is your thing, Grendel is just, I mean, Grendel was so ahead of its time.
It's
it's been stolen from over and over again in comics to the point where you'll read it and you'll go, this sounds like stuff that's been done, but it's been done because he did it and everybody first, took it from him.
Like, yeah, a lot of that stuff has like Matt Wagner did a lot of the art, but then after he stopped, he was writing it and not drawing it. You had like the Pander Brothers and like amazing artists that were really cool. And speaking of amazing artists that are really cool, I'm going to use that as a segue.
Nice segue.
And I'm also going to segue in terms of recap pages, because this is the recap of the week. Copra number one by Michael Fifa from Image Comics is out, and I've been waiting for this for a long time.
Wow. This needed. This is like, what, seven trades in, so it needs a lot of recap.
Yeah, well, but like, so it's an extra-sized issue. You get a full comic, and then the back is essentially like a who's who with a complete recap of everything that's happened beforehand. But what you basically really need to know is like if Suicide Squad from the 80s, like John Ostrander, Luke McDonald Suicide Squad, was like an art book. it's like it's there. The parallels are quite obvious, and
Deadshot is nearly plagiaristically on the nose.
There are definitely points of this where I was just like, wow. The guy that is the Shade analog as well is very, very straight. But at the same, there's other characters that you have to kind of think about, like, and they're pretty original. But the art style is totally original, and I love Michael Fifa, and I love the art and the layout, and this is... He's done a lot of stuff like G.I. Joe and whatnot, and that. And it's
he gets hired on to do crazy shit.
It's cool, but this is like his stuff.
Yeah.
And that's really like if you've ever been like, why does everybody freak out about this guy? Like, here's your perfect opportunity. Cause it's like story, but then like index that has like just tons of info and awesome, like just like everything you need to know about the characters, everything you need to know about the story. It's like a masterpiece of first issuedom when the series is not actually on its first issue. So that was a big winner for me.
Yep, that's also a very exciting book to be out this week. Yeah,
it's like it would be like Cobra if the B was a P and it was pronounced Cobra.
There you go.
That's what you're looking for. It's under C.
So Doctor Strange number 20 is out.
The last issue of this run.
Yeah. We've got lots of our ghost dog, which made me very happy. It's, you know, it's not exactly what I would call a satisfying wrap up, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was okay.
It was okay.
I should say it's probably okay. I didn't actually read it.
It is. It's good. It's just, I don't know. The series was so up and down with all the space stuff when they had to come back from Jason Aaron going, by the way, there's no magic. And then Mark Waid's like, oh,
there's magic in space.
I guess I got to go to space to get magic back. Fuck, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah. It was a corner to be written out of.
It really painted into a corner, absolutely.
The last issue of House of X, number 6, is out. So there will be one more issue of Powers of X, and then they'll relaunch X-Men. This one is, I actually did read cover to cover, minus the ephemera stuff, which I am largely ignoring, which I probably shouldn't, because there's a ton of stuff in there that will help me figure out everything that's already happened and will happen for the next 12 issues, but I'd rather just read it as a comic. This is the X-Men setting up the laws of their new nation state that they have created, and... fittingly wrapping up the House of X, and I don't know if you're probably reading House of X, so I don't want to say too much more about it.
Yeah, it's
great.
Continues to be great.
Art's great. Story's great.
Vengeance of Vampirella number 1 from Dynamite Comics is out this week. Yeah. If you like your comics with bloody boobs on page 2, guess what? You're going to love it.
I require blood-soaked boobs on page 2, and so therefore this is my pick of the week. I'm just kidding. I actually had a really hard time with this because Vampirella is the hero that will say, and she's like, she's a vampire that kills people from space.
Yeah,
I feel like it should be more of a sci-fi thing.
It's too bad. I think
Who is this? Zenoscope?
It is Dynamite.
It's Dynamite. So almost Zenoscope.
Yep. I think the problem is that Vampirella's been going on for a really long time, and there have been a lot of really bad Vampirella stories going on, whatever. And then they got a great writer to write this one Vampirella book that's going on right now.
That's Christopher Priest.
That's Christopher Priest.
Or and just Priest, I guess.
Really?
I think he's just Priest.
No. Whoa, that's badass. So,
I mean, his name is actually James Owlsley.
Oh, that's less.
He was an editor at DC, and then he went freelance and he changed his name to Christopher Priest.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But basically, the deal is that in general, Vampirella stories are bad, and to expect Vengeance to have been a great story would be a little.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Can we talk about this one?
Yeah. Oh, please.
So this was a shocker for me, and I ended up pulling this one to come home with me. I have not particularly loved this series to date, but Savage Avengers number 6 is a next level. And mainly, I will say mainly due to the coloring of Tamara Bonvillain, who hopefully I pronounced that right. It might be just Bonvillain. I don't know. It's written by Jerry Duggan and drawn by Kim Jacinto. And is Travis Lanham on the lettering. This is basically Conan and the Punisher fighting their way out of the Savage Land as like a single, that's all that happens. And it's amazing. The layout, the art, the sound effects, the Steranko-ness of it is just like, I've been reading Steranko Shield all week. So I'll probably drop Steranko more than once. This is the most Steranko-iest comic of the week. It's just like the logos are the panels, but all, you know, like just, it's just fantastic. Like the draftsmanship is really good. The characters, it's not overly rendered. It's not overly realistic. It's got like a fun kind of vibrance to it, but the coloring is just like, bam. It's fantastic. Honestly, this might be my pick of the week, Savage Avengers number 6.
Wow.
This is like a fantastically produced comic.
Awesome.
You know, regardless of whether the writing is the best thing I've ever read, there's not much to it. It's literally Conan and the Punisher machine gunning their way out of the Savage Land.
You got me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's pretty much what I want in a fun superhero thing. So, good job. All hands on deck with Savage Avengers. If this creative team continues past this issue, I will continue with them, sight unseen.
Justice League 33.
Yeah.
More just nonsense.
I wanted to be into this, but it's like now they're throwing other artists into it. It's just like, come on. Like,
Two things.
I love the Justice Society. They're in
yes.
it.
Yes. There's also a throw to something else that's very exciting.
Thing at the end.
The thing at the end was really exciting.
There's cool stuff in it.
There's cool stuff that happens. I will say one thing. My God, why don't they have editorial tell people what why doesn't Cheetah ever look the same? Why doesn't Cheetah look the same from panel to panel?
Yeah.
Like the cover.
Well, I mean, I assume this is because it's a fill-in artist.
The cover has her with like,
and it's not like it's bad art. Yeah, yeah, that's what she looks like now.
What's that?
That's just a different artist doing the same thing.
It's just completely different.
Yeah, she looks like she's gonna like.
It's like Beast from like the 70s or 80s going into Beast from
the 90s
to 2000s.
Hard time with the whole like Beast character that still has like human breasts. Like, you know, the female Beast character is like, there's completely transformed into a cat, but for some reason I still have huge jugs. It's just a bad
and
character
not six
design.
Of them
and not six of them exactly. I mean, exactly. If you had six enormous jugs, I'd be more on board because at least it would, you know, whatever. So Justice League is just,
wouldn't we all?
This is like, you know, you've got a top hit writer and the editorial is just like, yeah, sure, whatever. And this is Dark Knight's Metal. It's just like, it's not like there's not cool stuff in it. It's not like, and I'm not trying to shit on it. It's just like the guy needs someone to make it a story, and clearly no one is making it a story. So this was like, I had been following this because it's the return of the Justice Society. But
reel
like,
him
honestly,
in.
The Justice Society deserved a much better return.
And I get to say this because I know there's no chance that Scott Snyder is going to listen to our podcast.
I don't, honestly, Scott Snyder, if you listen to it, just chill out, dude. Like, you don't have to throw 5 trillion concepts into every single comic. Just like, come up with one good one and then rock it.
Yeah.
You know, that last time, the Capullo thing with last, that's fun. I like that. That's good.
Yeah, it is.
Court of Owls was good. You know, it's like, it's not like he doesn't do good stuff. It's just like, he's just like, yeah, all systems go, 400 million concepts. It's great. And it's just funny. Like, it doesn't read well.
Especially when he does horror. When he does horror, he can tone everything way down.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
I guess he's going for it, and I guess people maybe like it. I don't know.
It is definitely appealing to a certain demographic. So my taste is not necessarily the world's taste, but I can't dig it.
I just think it should read like consistently from beginning to end. Like, not necessarily like that it has to have, like, you could play with the structure. Like, look at Ice Cream Man doing like the weird palindrome issue or whatever. Like, play around with it. Like, but like, have a beginning, have a middle, and have an ending. Like, just 101. This is just like, maybe it's just that it's not a single issue. It's like, it's, this is the beginning, middle, and end of a larger thing that will be in a trade, and maybe it will be different in that format, and I'm just not being able to give it its due because I'm not perceiving it in its whole.
It's just too huge.
But I just
it's
think I huge. Can't even imagine this as like just like a chapter of something. It's like, and nobody wants to read the Justice League teaming up with the Justice Society more than I do. Although the last page is wicked cool. I will go.
All right, Deathstroke 48.
They're wrapping up Deathstroke. It's going to end soon.
It's and very
this
bloody.
Reads very much like that.
Yep.
But it's written by a priest, and it's drawn by good people, and it's a good creative team.
So here's a book that I was very on the fence about, and I'm glad that I actually ordered okay on. I was like, I was going to cut this down to nothing because I had no basis for any idea. The team didn't mean anything to me, and I was like, nobody's really reported much on it. This is Contagion from Marvel.
Yeah, I expected nothing.
I expected
it
nothing.
Much more.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a good story.
Yeah, it was a fun story and lots of Fantastic Four. And the character that's going to be the Day Saver, it looks like, is an interesting choice.
Yeah, well, and it's not. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that that it's. So this one is the Thing, and each one will focus on a different one. So the next one's going to focus on Iron Fist, and a good handle on Iron Fist. Ed Brisson, is that the writer on that one? He also did another book that was out this week, and like I think a number one. And it was good. Oh yeah, he did Ghost Rider as well.
Oh nice.
But this is a good. He had a good week for Marvel, two number ones, and this one you might think of as like just a throwaway kind of Marvel Zombies kind of thing. It is definitely not Marvel Zombies.
Nope.
It is definitely much much better than you might have thought. And if you were expecting it to be awesome, then I will say you're psyched.
It's a creeping fungus from space, or
pretty
something.
Much, and it's on the loose.
Yeah.
How about maybe this?
Oh man. Yeah. This is a big one.
Yeah. So season one of Grant Morrison's Green Lantern number 12 is out. This is written by Grant Morrison, drawn by Liam Sharp and, O'Leaf. Steve O'Leaf, colorist, Tom Orzechowski, letterer. Why can I pronounce Orzechowski, but I can't pronounce like half of the names that
it's a good question.
It's because Tom Orzechowski has been around for a very long time, and
I was gonna say because you spent a lot of time in Chicago.
Also, I might still be mispronouncing it. Maybe it's Orzechowski.
Well, who knows?
I don't know. Anyway, this is the finale of Hal Jordan's battle against his weird cyborg antimatter universe counterpart. It is the return of the Kwaman, and if you are familiar with the Green Lantern mythology pre the colorful spectrums, you know that Quard is the antimatter universe, and so clearly this is what's going on, is a good versus evil kind of thing.
And if they touch without their force fields, they're gonna explode into little pieces.
They pretty much touch.
They keep saying, they say like 14 times. No, but they do. No, they're only touching their force fields together.
Oh.
That's why that big countdown is so important. If you guys touch, because he's your antimatter equation, you're going to explode.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess it does make sense.
There's a lot of, there is a lot of touching though. Sexy touching.
I don't know that I would describe much. There is some weird thing that happens at the end, which is a hallmark of the Grant Morrison stuff, where like something will show up and it'll just be, it's like, It is a little annoying to me because it's like that thing where like someone's talking to you and they just mention like some name, like you know who that name is, mm-hmm. and you don't know who it is, and there's no way you would know who it is, but like they expect that you know who it is, so you have to kind of like pretend that you know who it is, but you definitely don't. And it sucks.
That's reading Grant Morrison.
Well, it is in a certain way because there's like these people that show up at the end and it's like, who the fuck are these people? They've never been in anything. But
wait,
they probably have.
They definitely have.
These guys?
Yes.
I've never seen these guys before. This guy. Who's this?
Oh, no. I don't know. Sorry.
They just show up and it's just like, we're these guys. And it's like... But I know there will be a payoff, so I've learned with Grant Morrison, he's earned the right to like do that because I know ultimately that like you know he could do 100 issues and the 100th issue would wrap back around to who these guys are and it would be like, oh, okay, I get it now.
Exactly. So, Black Cat number 5 is a comic book.
Yeah, it is. I flipped through it.
Perfect.
Ooh, this was kind of fun.
Yes. Bizarre Adventures number 1, continuing this...
Marvel is re-upping the copyright on Bizarre Adventures.
This Marvel re-upping copyrights that they're calling their legacy program.
Oh, the... What's the one? The Becky
vampire
Cloonan,
one?
There's a Becky Cloonan Dracula story.
Evelyn O'Reilly by Becky Cloonan and Michael Conrad. Oh, Mike, look at them. They're still buddies.
But it's... Dracula. It's a Dracula story.
Yes.
Like he's Dracula, like Hammer Horror Dracula.
Yep.
It's pretty great.
And Becky does all of the art, which is awesome. So that's
there's
pretty cool.
There's also a Goliath story in it and a Shang-Chi story in it. And
Aaron Connolly and drawing and John Adams writing. Awesome. Oh my God. His art is so fun.
Who's that? The Goliath guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was
so
really cool.
Fun.
There's a variant cover that guy did that I really like a lot. In
love
fact, it's quite eye catching.
It is. Batman Turtles.
Batman Turtles was
number 6.
Wraps it up.
Wraps it up with crazy shit.
Puts it in a little half shell, if you will.
Yes. It's so fun.
Yeah, it's great. There's like a thing. There's some crazy stuff in it.
Batman number 80.
Yes. You know, I feel like, you know, we were talking about the editorial thing. And then it's like a few months ago, maybe a month ago, two months ago, they were like, yeah, Tom King, his Batman's done and he needs to wrap it up. And basically he was given an editorial direction that he needed to wrap the fucking shit up. And now he's doing it. And it's actually not that bad. Like kicking ass editors, like kick these guys ass. Don't let them just fucking do whatever the goddamn hell they want.
Yeah.
Make it a
story.
It's
true.
This was not bad. Like I have not enjoyed this Batman run at all. And I love Tom King. In general, like,
yep.
Like when it's a finite thing and a story that's to be told, but when it's like 75 issue, blah, 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 like it gets
yep.
dumb. Like this is like, okay, now here's where shit's going down and you get it in the story. It makes sense. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm feeling passionate today.
Fair enough. I'm going to talk about a comic
this.
That's great.
It's great.
Batman
it's
number 251.
It's a reprint.
The wonderful... facsimile edition. Oh my God.
On the good paper again.
It's so cool.
Keep pumping them out on that good paper.
Yeah, DC's using all these like
it's
Baxter
like, yeah,
style.
It's like so it's a facsimile edition, but they're doing the fancy newsprint that's not really newsprint. It's like infinitely higher quality than this book looked like when
yeah,
it came out.
It's Baxter
like,
paper, pretty much.
Is it Baxter paper? Yeah, I'm not so good with what type of comics paper, but it's got the newsprinty feel. It doesn't feel like the new Teen Titans
Except
Baxter
paper. I think
paper.
It's recycled Baxter paper.
Yeah, it's thin. That's
Ooh.
What I like about it. It's thin. Like when the Teen Titans came out in Baxter. Sorry, I just burped. When
we're
Teen
both drinking
we
for
are
this
drinking.
One. Sorry, everybody.
I'm always drinking during this, but you've joined.
I have joined this time.
So yeah, when in the 80s, 84, when Teen Titans and Omega Men and those things came
yeah.
out, and the Baxter the paper was really thick.
Yes, that's true.
And so it still had that kind of pulpy feel, but it was really really thick and it was better paper. This is that paper, but like thin.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's great. I love it. I love it. Please do more.
Marvel Action Black Panther.
It's
number 3,
written by Kyle Baker.
Yep.
Black Panther comic. Who drew it?
Some guy.
Some guy.
Juan Samu.
Yeah, I think the series is fine.
Colors by David Garcia Cruz and letters by Sean Lee.
I give it a flip. It looks cool.
Like all these books, I had no faith in them. I did not care. And
why would you?
The idea that Marvel would give stuff over to IDW to print just seemed absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, they must have just not wanted anything good to come out of it. So, but then it's all great.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, I just flipped through it.
The only one I don't really care for is the Avengers one, and that's also the only one that doesn't sell.
Yeah, it doesn't have very good art. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
To whoever draws it, if they're listening.
Draws it.
So Doom Patrol, Weight of the Worlds number 4 is out, and I was realizing today that these feel like they're coming out really fast, but that's just because the last series came out so slowly that these ones are actually coming out monthly. And this one is drawn by Nick Pitara, who is awesome. One of my favorites. I flipped the first page and I was like, holy shit, who is this? And then I flipped the next page and I was like, oh my god, it's Nick Pitara. I had no idea. I didn't look at the cover. This is a very flex mentalo.
Sure.
I've never really nailed, even though I watched the series, which was actually really good.
Mentalo.
So he goes back to the beach where he became the man of muscle mystery, and it's polluted and everything's screwed up, and so it's kind of like it's got that going on. But then there's this whole thing with like Cliff Steele, where like he becomes like a universal handyman. There's like real weird shit with Rita Farr that's real weird. It's great. I love the series. It's written by Gerard Way and Jeremy Lambert.
And Lambert,
and it is colored by Tamara Bonvillain, who is awesome. A little less punchy on the colors than that Savage Avengers, but at the same time, still expertly crafted. This is a great looking book, and it is to be continued. So I am praying that Nick Pitara is also drawing the next issue as well. Next up is
Die.
I wanted to throw this in here. Do you read this book?
I have stopped reading it, even though I love it.
Okay, yeah. I keep hearing how awesome
it is. It's wonderful.
I keep skipping it, and I missed
two issues, and then I was like, oh, fuck, I'll just hit it and trade.
Yeah, I feel like this is, like, I looked at it. The art is fantastic.
It's so good.
I'm sure the story is cool. I didn't want to, like, get into it because this is number 8.
Yep, same here.
It is, who is this? Cy Spurrier? No, who is this?
This is Kieran Gillen.
Kieran Gillen, and I can't remember the artist.
Hans. I don't know which Hans, because they don't put the fucking
Isn't there
credits
someone
in.
Named Stephanie Hans? Is it Stephanie Hans?
Maybe. Guys, creator owned. Really. Maybe actually support your fellow creators here.
Yeah, they keep putting it in like weird spots, like
the
middle, like not the end or the beginning,
like online.
Online, full credits online. It's called Die Die Die, or is it called Die, or is it?
Sure,
I don't know. Anyway, Gillen Hans Cowles. I'm going to find these credits. But this book looks great, and I've heard amazing things about it, and I just have not, because I knew it was about role-playing stuff. It's not really a favorite genre of mine, so I kind of skipped it because I thought it had elves in it. But I would say it doesn't. I saw nary an elf when I flipped through this book. Here it is.
Stephanie Hans, nice.
Stephanie Hans. Clayton Cowles is the letterer. Ryan Hughes is the designer. So I guess the coloring is also by Stephanie Hans, because it just says artist. But yeah, this is on the radar for me. I'm gonna check out a trade. Perhaps you might also be reading this book, and if so, you're psyched. There's a new issue.
Yes. Okay. All right. I'm gonna talk about the best name for a comic of the week. That would be Vampire State Building by Charlie Adlard and Ange is one of the writers, and Patrick Renault is another one of the writers. Really great. This is a fun book.
It's cool to see Adlard's work in color.
Yeah,
honestly, like I was like,
it's
wow,
real good. It's
kind of revelatory.
I agree. It really changes the game on his artwork.
Yeah, new level. He's a great artist.
He is a great artist, and this is a fun book. I mean, obviously I would guarantee that the elevator pitch when they were putting it together was vampires in Die Hard, and they just were like in the Empire State Building.
I feel like this one is like the elevator pitch was just Vampire State Building.
It's
literally just like those three words.
Take all the money.
I got Charlie Adlar drawing it. Vampire State it's Building.
Vampire State Building.
Sold. Like who published it then?
It's nobody I even know. It's yeah. Ablaze Comics.
Ablaze was just like, yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Actually, I feel like this somewhere in the stupid gray matter of my brain that I can't access, I feel like I've seen this before. Like maybe this was something that came out before and is being represented, or it's a new story.
This cover reminds me of something else.
Yeah.
The hand on the granite.
Right.
Like it looks like another book, and it might be
familiar. It feels like an old friend.
You know, it
perhaps
really
you
does.
Should welcome it into your life.
Yes, just let it in. It is really fun. It's a great first issue. I would say give it a shot.
Something I gave a shot to, because I just like random one-page bits of stuff, Marvel Comics 1001, with a beautiful wraparound variant cover from Patrick Gleason, who is now a Marvel guy, and that's an adjustment because I'm just so used to him being like a Batman guy. His Venom alone makes me want him to do a Venom series.
Yeah,
look at that.
No.
That's great. This is very much continuing. Actually, I feel like Marvel Comics 1001 is like they sent out like a blanket pitch for like Marvel Comics 1000 where they were like, okay, one page, Marvel, you do it. And then they got like way more than they could put in the book. And this is like the stuff that they got that didn't fit. Because it's like a lot of one page, almost like gag kind of stuff, but like not like silly, like crazy, mad kind of stuff, but like just like cute.
Yeah, it reminds me of when they did the Strange Tales.
Yeah, but
or it's, when DC did Bizarro Comics or any of that stuff.
But it's definitely still like that one page Marvel Comics 1000 format where everything is one page. And I actually really enjoyed it. There's some just cool art.
There was a very important character moment with Squirrel Girl where she was questioning her origin and got fourth dimensional, fourth wall breaky.
Ooh.
With talking Jack Kirby.
Yeah, it's weird too, because that's the first Squirrel Girl that I've seen that isn't written by Ryan North.
Yeah.
So anyway, Marvel Comics 1001 was out, and it was just kind of fun.
Let's talk about everything.
Ooh, yeah, everything. Let's
okay.
talk. I love this book.
I love this book too. This second issue is exactly the opposite of where I expected this book to go. I wouldn't call myself disappointed in it. I hope that it doesn't get any more vague, is what I would say. This is as artsy and ephemeral as it can be before it's going to lose me.
Yeah.
If it gets less plot driven than this, I'm going to drop it.
Yeah.
But this is that perfect Vertigo thing right now. Mm-hmm. This issue has hit it, but it's like it's also slightly less plot driven than the first issue. Yeah. And it makes me worry that it's continuing on an arc of losing plot. This was kind of sad. It had some real like melancholy moments of just like consumerism and just sadness and just human sadness. And it was kind of not the most uplifting book, but it's so clever and so many cool little bits in it. And
I do
and also,
sort of wonder if
artsy.
This is a, is if this is a trade, you know, like if this is like a, you know, it might
and
be.
That's that is of course the worry, but it especially just because it's a Berger book, and so far I've had such shit luck with Berger books. There have been so few of them that I have latched onto.
Speaking of Berger books, there was another Berger book.
I don't know
if you flipped through it.
I did.
I did as well. I thought it was actually pretty...
Anne Nocenti, Flavia Bondi, Lee Lowridge.
So I like Anne Nocenti. She wrote a lot of comics that I really loved. Longshot.
Oh, nice. Okay.
She wrote a really long run of Daredevil that got real cosmic. The Silver Surfer was in it. Mephisto was in it at one point. It tied into the Fall of the Mutants.
Cool.
Inferno. That's when Mephisto and Silver Surfer both came into it then.
The series where Wolverine ate a baby.
Yes. But in a sense,
that might have been in a what if, but he still ate a baby.
So here's actually, this is a total aside.
More than Wolverine eating a baby?
Yes.
Okay.
So Anne Nesenti wrote Longshot, and there's a character that was at the very least visually based on her called Ricochet Rita.
Okay.
Did you know that Ricochet Rita became Spiral?
No.
That sucks. I found that out from a friend of mine that barely reads comics, but like read those comics and was like, she became Spiral. I was like, no. Like, no, that could not be what happened. Yeah, they took Ricochet Rita into Mojoville and they tortured her and planted arms on her, and she became Spiral in the future and then traveled back in time and, like, I think, like, murdered herself or something stupid.
Jesus,
like,
Christ.
This is, like, the perfect thing of, like, with what the X-Men used to do and why I actually had a somewhat of a hard time accessing it in, because it was just, like... At a certain point with the X-Men,
who didn't have a hard time accessing the X-Men at some point,
would have just turned back, gone back in time, become evil, and murdered themselves as a baby, and then ate them. Anyway, whatever.
Wolverine did.
I have a huge soft spot for the Longshot miniseries. It was so fun and great, and just when I was a kid, like, it was the first Marvel book I got into. More than
Spider-Man
stuff around then,
still
Secret
very
Wars,
cool,
whatever. But like Longshot was like the book from Marvel because I love DC. Anyway, whatever. That's an aside. This is a book. It is called.
It's called Ruby Falls.
Ruby Falls, and it's murder mystery.
It is a murder mystery. It very much is.
It's a murder. I was trying to figure out. It felt like it. I wanted it, like, I expected it to be supernatural, but I don't think it is.
It is not.
I actually think it's just a murder mystery.
Like, it's just straight up murder mystery.
There was some great dialogue in it.
Yep.
But it's very much a first issue where it's kind of just like setting up the story. And it looks great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
So
I'm going to kick the cat off here before he unplugs us.
I am going to mention, surprisingly, I thought the narrative take from Fantastic Four number 15 is out. It's a second part of a story called Point of Origin that started in the last issue, and basically what it is doing is the Fantastic Four have, and this is kind of like that thing that Dan Slott does where it's like he kind of like looks at the old comics and like finds things in them to dovetail stories off of, like
sometimes he does
very well. And he basically looked at this Fantastic Four thing and realized that, like, whatever their mission was, I mean, I guess clearly in the first issue of Fantastic Four, their mission was to beat the communists to space. But, like, assuming that that was not their mission in the modern parlance, he was like, they never said what their mission was. So he's saying that their mission was to go to this place in space. And so they built the rocket. They rebuilt their original rocket. They got in it and they flew to space.
Yep.
And then this issue is the place that they're going to is populated, has its own superheroes, and is like, who the hell are these guys coming to our place? And so when the Fantastic Four show up, they're almost like classic, like Marvel, like invader creatures where it's like, who are these? And it's, they all speak English, but like you can't understand it because you're from the perspective of this home planet. I thought it was really smart and fun, and the art is by Paco Medina.
And there's also speaking of dovetailing, it also kind of dovetails into Immortal Hulk as well, because there is a moment in Immortal Hulk that references the original.
Yeah,
Fantastic
I think that's
Four.
More on a Hulk angle than on a Fantastic Four angle, but yes,
I hope,
absolutely.
I think they're just trying to tie those.
They're
events
tying those
together.
the two origins together, but that is definitely more of a, has nothing to do with this Fantastic Four, all about the Hulk. Lois Lane number 4 from Greg Rucka, who has a hit television series on his hands with Stumptown. Yeah, Stumptown is huge.
Really?
Yeah.
No,
apparently
sure.
It's really good. I don't
Is
have
that why
TV.
Somebody pulled all of the issues of Stumptown out of my bins and said, "Here, don't sell these for cheap." And I went, "Okay."
Yes, that is entirely why, because the series is a huge hit.
I don't know anything anymore.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that
much. I'm bad at running a comic store.
No. If I had thought that you didn't know that, I would have told you myself. It just premiered and it's
cool.
Big, it's a big hit.
That's great.
Anyway, Greg Rucka and Mike Perkins and Paul Mounts do a Lois Lane comic, which is on number 4, and it's out.
It is. There's a lot of question stuff in this.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
I didn't read it because it's like a thing where I'm going to save up a few issues and read it.
It was mostly centered around Lois Lane and John. So
Kent.
Superboy.
Yeah, Superboy.
It's cool. It's definitely a character issue.
There's also Legion of Superheroes Millennium number 2 by Bendis and a lot of artists, which is basically the main character of it, which if you haven't
read
the first issue.
This was not as strong as the first one.
I actually liked it better than the first one.
Crazy.
Crazy.
How is that possible?
Because it made more sense to me.
Wow.
I mean, some of these trippy middle panels didn't necessarily make a lot
of sense. The OMAC thing, I was like, I don't need this.
Well, she's just going through the different eras all the way to the Legion.
Yep.
So OMAC is one of them, and she experiences the OMAC saga. I don't know. It just had a clear ending.
That's true. It did.
I think it should have been one special. It should have just been one.
I agree.
Here's Millennium. It's cost $8.
Yep.
There's just this preview of these new Joe Hill Hill House comics.
Yeah, it's
DC.
A free preview. The three new
DC books.
Yeah.
From the Joe Hill Hill House comics imprint.
Yes, at least the one that's about a basket full of heads looks really good.
Yes, that one does look good. It's actually the only one that's appealing to me. And then finally, also from Brian Bendis and Hugh Timms? Who's
Hugh Timms is a friend of ours.
He's a guy. Yeah, he's
a local comic creator.
Yeah, yeah, and customer as well from my days of selling comics. Sorry about that. No, this is John Timms and Andre Lima Araujo, who is a guy you like from that weird run of Impossibles, Incredibles, what is it? Ultimates.
Oh, for fuck's sake, yes.
Ultimates. The Young Justice are lost in the multiverse and they're on the evil Earth with the evil versions of themselves. But you get the origin of this Teen Lantern character, which is...
That's pretty cool.
Kind of, you're like, how the hell does an 8-year-old have, you know, or however old she's supposed to be, 10-year-old, 12-year-old, I don't know, whatever. You get that origin. She's from Brazil.
Yes.
That's the origin. That's the entire origin.
No, because she's from Brazil. She gets
everybody who's born in Brazil gets a Green Lantern. Magic lantern. It's just, you know, it's birthright.
You've been watching Fox News, haven't
you? No, I've been watching Rox News.
Oh, yes, that's right. Rox News.
Roxxon from Marvel Comics has their own news channel. It is called Rox News.
So Ghost Rider number 1.
Ooh! Oh shit! I just
bulldozed over this one. This is great. We were saying earlier it's gonna probably come off as inside pool to a lot of people,
a little bit,
because it is dropping you right smack dab in the middle of continuity, which is a terrible idea of something to do with Ghost Rider because people are gonna want to be brought back into it.
But ultimately it's setting up is Danny Ketch versus Johnny Blaze.
Yeah, it's it beginning, middle, and end is everyone is... Blaze is now the king of hell. Everyone wants to take him down. There's like 3 different contenders who are trying to kill Blaze. And Ketch is basically acting as his bouncer in hell. So every time somebody starts a coup, Blaze is the Ghost Rider and comes and quashes it. Ketch does. Mm.
You know what it reminds me of?
What?
And it probably is just because I'm currently on season 8 of this, of watching this entire series, but it's basically the show Supernatural.
It feels very Supernatural.
It's like they're the two brothers.
Yeah.
They've got like their drama.
Yep.
One of them goes to hell.
Oh, yeah.
There's all kinds of like super real parallels. Like,
no,
basically,
you're
like
right.
This, I mean, not to shit on Ed Brisson, because like I think he's a good writer. He did that Contagion. That was good. This was not bad. It was just like you said, inside baseball. It was just like, if you don't know a lot about Ghost Rider, it might not be the most accessible book.
Yeah. I think this is not, I'm not going to say that it's a bad place to jump on though.
No.
Because it's very easy to understand what's going on. It's just, Yeah. It is. It's weird that they didn't just kind of start from a real stopping point.
But just, that said, when your starting point is Johnny Blaze is the king of hell, it's just kind of like, you know, like also Supernatural has a king of hell.
Yeah.
His name is Crowley.
Yes.
Of course.
And
he's a douche.
He gets better. Don't worry.
Oh, he's already, I think, as good as he's going to get. I'm on season 8.
He gets nicer. Around season 426.
Oh, sick. Okay, so I have something to look forward to.
Yes. And the one thing that I wanted to point out.
Welcome to the Supernatural podcast.
The thing I've been actually waiting to see is that Ghost Rider finally uses his chains like Pinhead does.
In what? I don't know how.
This is a straight up Hellraiser, tears somebody apart with chains, uses the chain like the Hellraiser chains, and it's, you know, it's an homage maybe, but either way, it's I like it.
Also, I will say, nice chicken bug demon. That's cool.
I do also like the chicken bug demon.
The chicken bug demon, and there's also a skull ape. So the art is by
the demon choices are awesome.
Yeah, Aaron Cooter is the artist, and I feel bad that I didn't mention Aaron Cooter. He's great. He did a recent run of Guardians of the Galaxy. Been around for a little bit. He's good, and his demons are fantastic. there's like all kinds of fun demons in here. It was cool. I'm actually making it sound like it's actually a lot better than I'm making it sound. So I'm sorry.
I skipped so before many comics. before we get to the end and leave this at the end. Gnomon Omen #1 from Image Comics from Marco B. Bucci and Jacopo Camagni. Don't know how to say that last name.
I think you just literally summoned a demon. From the beginning to halfway through, I was enwrapped with Gnomon Omen. I was like, what is the deal? This is too weird of a title. It's like Event Leviathan. It has to be like, so there has to be something else with the title. But anyway, then literally at the exact halfway point, it completely lost me.
Okay, so we switch to the perspective of a person who does not have the ability to perceive color.
Okay, that halfway is through. Fine. I did get the color shift.
Okay. She has been touched by this otherworldly thing.
The same person?
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe
that's
she's...
That's why I didn't get it, because it didn't feel like it was the same
because characters. There's a car accident out there, and I think everybody just assumes...
No, I got the car accident. Because, I got all the way to the touch.
Because the person who came down to check on the car accident was not part of the car accident. And they were like, oh, no, she's been in an accident, right? I think that's what we're assuming.
Yeah, it's this... I don't know. I feel like it's like... Like, I actually...
We're going to need a second issue to know exactly what's up.
We need a second issue. We need a second reading.
But... It is.
But it had me. It had me like from the jump. It was like, whoa, this is cool.
It is. And it's got a lot to it. Again, sort of like everything as well. If this continues to be just amorphous.
Yeah.
Fuck this book.
Yeah, yeah.
But if the plot starts to congeal, it's going to be fucking amazing.
It did have really cool art coloring. I'm
amazing.
Sorry.
Amazing.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
Oh, are you now?
I am.
Are we boring you, Bob?
just really tired.
Sea of Stars, #4.
Yeah, so I've been kind of like not paying as much attention to this book as I probably should. And I decided long ago never to walk in anyone's shadow. But right after I decided that, I was going to read all of the issues of Sea of Stars because it looks really cool, and I don't know why I'm not paying attention to it because I really should be. It looks fantastic.
Jason Aaron, Dennis Hallam, Stephen Green, and Rico Renzi.
Yeah, really good, really good.
No One Left to Fight, #4 is out.
Fantastic coloring.
Yeah, it's fantastic art, fantastic lettering by our friend Taylor Esposito.
I do really like the coloring. Just though. Shout out to coloring.
Yeah, the coloring on this book is so beautiful. The choice of color palette is genius.
Yep.
Or maybe not genius, but bold. It's very strong.
I'm gonna make a. Well, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to say there's a reason why when you read old comics, and I've been reading a lot of Steranko Shields.
Yeah.
there's a reason why there's a lot of pink and orange and like things that like you don't necessarily like. For some reason, the sky
green
is
Hulk
like
with purple pants.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why these. And so you see these palettes kind of coming back, and they seem so bold, but it's just because everything's been colored like various shades of turd for so long that like you're just, you think that's what comics have always looked like, but they shouldn't really look like that. They should be bold and they should be punchy and dynamic, and there should be the background and the foreground should really stand out from each other. And I'm really happy that people are remembering that because it's effective. Like, there's a reason why the cover of the Punisher issue that came out this week is fucking pink.
It's pink and purple.
Pink and purple. It's great. It stands out.
Yeah, it's great. The interiors are, of course, very dark and mopey.
Yeah, exactly. They look like a fucking someone threw the pages in a puddle.
But that's good because it's
the
Punisher.
It's the Punisher. Maybe it's good. It's not necessarily good. I'm not saying it's not good in this case because I didn't read this Punisher comic. But
it's in that kind of, it's in the style of the old of the Daredevils and all those 90s noir-y kind of Marvel things.
Well, when you're gonna do those 90s noir-y, like, I, to me, it's like Vertigo coloring is really like where, to me, like it jumped into this like neutral palette morass that it became. But one of the things, like, if you go back and read the writer was Paul Jenkins, the artist was Sean Phillips, and the colorist was Matt Hollingsworth on Hellblazer.
Yes,
those ones, they are drab as hell, but there are pops that like make you, that pull you in or pull you out. Like, so it's, you can do that. I'm not totally
stupid
shitting.
Hollingsworth being so good.
He's fucking great. He's the first modern colorist that I became like a fan of as a colorist. Like,
he's also
that run.
He's also basically he is the head of the spear that is allowing colorists the kind of getting them the respect that they deserve.
Nice.
So
yeah, no, there's a lot of like kind of rock star colorists these days, and he's foremost. I think Dave Stewart is another obvious choice for someone who really but regardless.
And Tamara Bonvillain.
Tamara Bonvillain is like my favorite colorist.
And also Laura Allred, for fuck's sake.
She's great. She's
I
great.
I love Laura Allred. I mean,
she's
she great. Does
and
she
I
colors,
like her for different reasons, but right. like because it's like, but very genre stylistic with her.
It is true that, I mean, I think that's true for everyone, though. It's like, that's probably like saying that Mike Mignola is, I mean, it's true. Of course he is, but he's still a genius.
Yeah.
But but it's like her on Lady Killer was just fucking awesome. Mm. She was great on that book. I mean, obviously all of Allred's stuff, she's perfect for. Her color choices are genius. She's very spot colory, which is very different than what a lot of these guys are doing. She's not doing a lot of the shading and all those things, but
but that
as
shading
a spot colorist
can
and all that,
like something in itself that
true.
Is not
I
as rad.
Just love her stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. I'm actually going to reopen this Savage Avengers comic because it's so good. Oh, man. Oh, just this one. That like literally just like grab Savage Avengers number 6 and open to the centerfold.
Let me
it's
see that.
Fucking brilliant.
Let me see this. I didn't even look at it because it was Savage Avengers.
Ah, dude. It's
I just
so
kind
good.
Of, a, I mean, which is stupid because the book is great. I just, you know, I just knew what I was getting.
Now I can't open.
Wow, that is not the color palette I was expecting.
No, no, like, but I'm sorry. It's actually not the center panel. It's, but it is a.
So Marvel has gone blue and pink fucking nuts this week.
Yeah, but this is like.
Oh, that's pretty.
It's so cool. It's so cool. Like, I would be so proud to be like one link in the chain that was making that book.
Oh my god, that pinup is gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like a Third Eye poster from the 70s.
Oh man,
it
nice.
Straight up looks like one of those Kirby, like 3D. Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, it's so cool. Like, it's
like
so
one of the Blacklight posters that they used to sell. Beautiful.
I feel like they should do like a Blacklight edition of this storyline.
Ooh, it's
oh,
so
man.
Good.
The part where Conan stabs the dinosaur in the head with a sword from like a distance away. Oh my god, it's just so good.
Purdy.
It's so good.
Awesome. Well, there you go. There's all of those things. There was something really good trade.
There were a lot
week.
Of trades, and I 100% dropped the ball and forgot to take a picture of any of them. There were a lot of trades.
There's a nice Immortal Hulk hardcover that came out this week. Cool. Fangoria came out this week with a big thing on both the new Creepshow and the new Fango's new movie, which is Satanic Panic, which was written by a friend of ours, Grady Hendrix. Ooh. And is awesome. We watched it this week or last week, and fucking A, that movie is awesome. It feels like a Grady Hendrix novel, which is one of the best things ever.
Cool.
If you're not familiar with him, check out My Best Friend's Exorcism, which is one of my favorites. I also really love We Sold Our Souls. Those two are really great.
I've never seen any of these.
Both novels, but awesome.
Read any of these.
But very good. And what else? Anything else really exciting?
I do feel like I have to say, because I just watched it this week, if you want a really good Satanic Panic, actual Satanic Panic movie, you should watch The Gate, starring Stephen Dorff.
That was like perfect in the middle of the Satanic Panic.
It was like 100%. Like, oh my God. Like the people who were scared that someone was taking their children from the daycare and taking them into the underground tunnels to sacrifice them to Satan, then made a movie, and it was called The Gate.
What Michelle Remembers, I believe, is what that book was called.
Oh, nice.
Something like that.
Anyway, sorry.
And also, I'll give you my, just since we're at the end of this and everybody stopped listening, my fun fact that I gave you already about The Gate. The little tiny munchkin are not little stop motion people. They're full size dudes in costumes in a room with gigantic props.
That's so cool.
I saw a behind the scenes photo and it was just these dudes with their heads off. And I was like, wait, why the fuck wasn't that stop motion?
Totally, I thought they were claymation.
It looks just like claymation. Everything looks like a rear projection, but instead they're running around on this giant sound stage with like a big chair and a big phone. And like,
oh man, yeah,
awesome.
That movie was actually really like it held up. Like,
no, I love
thought
that
it
movie.
Was, I thought
Gate
it was really
2,
good.
A little less.
Satanic Boogaloo.
Satanic Boogaloo. Yeah, a little less. But also, speaking of our friends and horror movies, our friend Damien, who is a guest on the Funbox Monster podcast now and again, he is in a movie called Haunt that was released this last week. And that movie is also very good, and we're going to be setting up a screening of it at the Nickelodeon soon.
He was featured in the Portland Press Herald recently, was he
not? I think he was, yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be doing that sometime in October, hopefully, fingers crossed, if everything goes right. Because of all this nonsense about the Joker movie, we can't do it as fun as we wanted to. We really wanted to do a full-on William Castle treatment. We were going to do actors and people passing out in the aisles and like being carried out and blah, blah, blah. But we can't do anything with masks. We can't do anything with that because everyone's afraid that incels are going to shoot up a showing of the Joker.
I mean, and let's...
Ugh, for fuck's sake.
I have to say, if I'm going to be mad at someone over that, I'm going to be mad at the incels for actually shooting up a Joker movie in the past.
Well, that's fair.
Like,
but
because,
I mean...
Like, I mean, yeah, I get it, but like... At the same time, true. Like the reason, like, let, I don't know, like, fuck those guys.
Well, absolutely. I just also am like, this stuff. It's somebody choked on a cough drop. The cough drop companies are really fucking up. It's like, no, they're not.
Yeah.
No.
Some people just have really small throats.
It's just something, you know, the next one. Oh no, they're shooting up this Sherry Belafonte Harper movie. God, everybody hates her now. Like, no, wait. Nobody fucking cares. Sherry Belafonte Harper is
Harry Belafonte's daughter, but
she hasn't made a movie since the 80s. So
I was
going
to say, she can't
why.
Possibly be. She has to be as old as I think Harry Belafonte is now, because Harry Belafonte is probably dead.
She probably is.
Yeah. Timely references the podcast.
I literally can't think of a single. No, I can. She was in a movie called Being from Another Planet.
I've never seen it.
Well, it was a delight. It was about a space mummy.
Ooh, space mummies are my favorite kind.
Anyway.
There's a lot of trade paperbacks. this
many
week.
Things. So much stuff up on the website,
magazines, and everything's on the website.
And we heard your call, all of you who said, "Hey, you're selling out of stuff on the web too fast. Sorry,
oh, you're selling out." Is and what people
so,
are saying.
And so what I'm doing is we now have. We have upped the quantities of all the stuff online Ooh. Considerably.
Hey.
So now we have about double the number of issues that we had before. So we will not sell out of the major things the way that we were before. So we're trying to build our subscriber base online. So well, come on in.
It sounds like it's growing.
Seems like it's working so far. So
nice.
Come to us. Yeah. Awesome. And remember, code BLARG !! For free shipping over $15. And we've got
it's
a bunch of stuff.
Written. That code is probably
it
written
is,
on,
it's
the
on the
website.
Yeah. You can just click on it and it'll apply. And also, you know, we always ship bagged and boarded. Everything's near mint unless otherwise mentioned. Hit us up. There's good stuff there. And there's lots. There's at current count, 87,000 back issues. On
Holy
our website
crap.
Right now.
Crap.
So
you've been busy.
Yes, I have.
Nice.
So hit us up and check out the website, and we will talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
If I had one wish.